The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio or its employees or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Welcome to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raker. Sponsored by Buoyancy PR, Johnny Baker Sullivan, Don Greco, author, Fame's Chocolates, IDI Dentistry, Dr. Jim Butler, iMarketing, JMR Productions, Dan Perkins, author, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Nonprofit, Skip Kenny Barbecue, Ultimate Air Shuttle, and Vidal, Veterans in Defense of Liberty. You're listening to W4CY.
Hi, this is Katherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. Our guest today is Amber Parker, a first-time author, and her book is Finding Simplicity, Learning to Live Like Jesus in the Midst of a Complicated World. You know, we all experience it. Sometimes it even, leads to illness or missing work, and that's the hard part. And I think that why should it be different for Christians? And our guest is a speaker, writer, and ministry executive who challenges us to find a simpler life by trusting God and modeling the simpler life that Jesus led. And let's meet Amber Parker and learn what God has taught her and how he led her to write. Welcome to our show, Amber, and congratulations on writing your first book.
Thanks so much, Katherine.
Hi, how are you? Being first-time authors, I think this is fun. What do you think, why do you think so many Americans, including Christians, feel so stressed in these troubled times?
Well, I think there's always a reason to find stress. So, you know, if you look at the news, you see all kinds of international crisis, national challenges, and then you just look at your own life. You might have financial crisis, health crisis, challenges at work or in relationships. And I think, like for myself, of some of the things that my close friends are walking through in this season, and it's really easy to get overwhelmed.
I think so, too. You know, I believe that we need to have some quiet time, you know,
yes.
And I believe that with all of the devices we have, that no matter how old you are, it can get so frustrating. You need to take time alone. You need to take time, I think, with God. And you're very young. I'm really excited about how you look and your youth. So When did you write the book?
So I started about 2 years ago writing, and really probably the end of 2018 into 2019 is when I wrote the bulk of the book. Yeah, so.
You look like you're in your 20s, am I correct?
I am actually 37, but I look like I'm about 25 is what I normally get, so, yeah.
Well, I'm 75 and I look 55.
Well, there you go.
So I think it's all in the way you feel about life and the way, you know, you live your life. Would you agree?
I do agree, yeah. Perspective makes a big difference.
Finding a simpler life, and what do you mean by that? And is it really an important goal for Christians, and why?
Yeah, so I believe simplicity is an important goal for Christians because when I look at the life of Jesus, that's how I see that he lived. When he walked on the earth, he always had time for God and he had time for people. And one of my favorite quotes, I share it in the book, is from John Ortberg. And he says that Jesus was often busy, but he was never in a hurry. And I love that distinction because life has a lot of things going on, but how we respond to them is up to us. And I think sometimes we spend a lot of time focusing on the things we can't change and control and letting that frustrate and overwhelm us. But what's going on in our heart and soul we can control. And I believe that's where simplicity ultimately lies, not in the external, but in the internal.
What drew you to this topic for your first book? And do you own life and study help draw you to this topic? did your own life and study help you to draw this to you? Because you're still pretty young, and so how long did it take you to write the book as well?
Okay, so I have always loved the book of James, and I have studied through it over the years with several different women's groups that I've led, and the last time I was going through it, we were just having such good conversations and talking through it, and it had so much application to life. I kept thinking, this could be a book, this could be a book, and it just, the thought wouldn't go away. So I started working on that from there, and it was about a two-year process overall to go through the book. But I think the reason I named it Finding Simplicity is because it walks through the book of James, and when I read James, James is a very simple author. Like, he's very straightforward, and he gives very practical advice, so it's hard to escape from. A lot of times, he'll just say, do this and don't do this. And when I read that, I need that straightforward talk into my life because it helps me know, okay, this is how I need to handle life circumstances.
And, you know, during that period of time, they handed you everything. There wasn't the conveniences that we have today back mm-hmm. during Jesus's or James's time. So with all of the technology and everything that we're doing, right, we've become almost like little mice, I would say.
Yes.
In some respects.
Yes.
So we don't know how to smell the roses. We don't know
mm-hmm.
how to relax. I mean, I start my day with prayers every morning. It gives me a certain thing because I'm doing it with my husband before he goes to work and my office is here. So it gives me structure in my life. And then there are times
mm-hmm.
when I'm sitting there by myself thinking to myself during my day, oh God, please help me to get through this day. And then
yes.
I take time to smell the roses. I take a break. So
mm-hmm.
is that what you do in your life?
I do. I think it's so important to stop because something I found is for a long time, and I still struggle with this, but for a long time I was so busy doing things, even if there were lots of good things, running from here to there and taking care of this, that I lost the purpose in my life. So it was all smacked full of things, but I didn't know where I was going. And when I would have some downtime, I would be so overwhelmed and stressed that I couldn't appreciate it. And I realized I have this unhealthy pattern in my life of just being too busy and too full of things. So I've really worked on finding quiet time, not just like where there's silence, but where I allow my soul to rest and reflect and really look at what's going on the inside, what's driving me and what's bothering me and why is that happening.
What have you've learned a lot from the book itself in writing it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you struggle with it?
You know, I did. I think I've told a few people when you write a book on simplicity, I would like say that's similar to what you pray for patience. You know, what you write about or teach on, God teaches you the lessons yourself. And so God really challenged me to look at if I was applying the principles that I was writing. And I think he put some challenges in my life to help me put these principles in practice.
So may I ask you, are you married and have children?
I am not married, and I have
You're not married, so yeah. So it's different for you as a single person, am I correct?
Mm-hmm, it is.
So when you have all the other parts of it, it's a little bit more difficult to sit down and take that time away, especially if you have young children or
mm-hmm.
if you have teenagers, because if you don't spend time yeah. with them, then you have all those other worries. So what
mm-hmm.
do you find, even as a single person, when do you take the time during your day or night to be able
mm-hmm.
to do this simple thing of being able to, number one, relax, be able to talk to God?
I make it a practice to do that every morning. So I read scripture and pray, and usually I read through a book. But I go very slow. I know a lot of people set a goal for like how much they read, but for me, I'm a slow processor, so I focus on intake and the impact versus the length of what I get through. So sometimes I'll read the same chapter over and over again just to let it sink in and learn from it.
You know, you taught the study of James to others over the years. What has God taught you from James that impacted your own life? Have you been to Israel yet?
I have not. I would love to do that, but I haven't done it yet.
You should. I have. It changed my life, actually, and I think it changes everybody's life in a sense. But, you know, you see when you're there, or, you know, even going into a desert or going somewhere that you would think that God would be walking or Jesus would be walking, and it becomes more simple. So you start off your morning with prayer and reading the Bible or scriptures, right? Mm-hmm. And what have you learned about James and James's life that interested you so much?
Well, I think over the long haul of studying James, one of my favorite parts of the book of James is the second half of chapter 3, where it talks about wisdom and where wisdom comes from, and it makes this distinction between the wisdom of the world and God's wisdom. And in there, it basically tells us that the wisdom of the world comes from jealousy and selfish ambition, and then it gives us a list of things of God's wisdom. And I have went to that passage so many times when I'm making a decision, and many times God's pointed out the ambition in my heart that, or the jealousy there, that I know, okay, this is not coming from God. This is coming from me, or coming from the wisdom of the world. Versus, there's other times when God shows me, yes, this is my wisdom, because look, it reflects all of this peace and gentleness and goodness that's from me. So that's probably been the biggest draw to James that has helped me in learning about wisdom.
Right. And do you find that young people are drawn to Christianity today?
That is a good question. I think young people are drawn to authentic Christianity when people live in love and stand out in this fast-paced, chaotic world. I believe that is a draw to people, because they want to know, how can I have that, and how can I live like that and see that kind of love.
Right. And it's amazing today how much, you know, we need kindness in our world. I mean,
yes.
I mean, during these troubled times of the political, whatever we call this, right, I see so much hatred. I've never seen this kind of hatred before. And I really believe that we need to get back to the basics of love and love on our neighbor, instead of just because you don't have the same political view, maybe, that you need to understand people and maybe educate them a little bit, but not throw anything at them or do anything that would harm them or make them feel bad. And I think we just have to educate people a little bit more in both, you know, what Christ really wanted. And he surely didn't want this, that's for sure. Right? So we need to take a little short break. So, Amber, where can people buy your book or find your book?
Place is on Amazon. You can look up Finding Simplicity. If they want to find out more about the book, they could go to findingsimplicitybook.com, and that also offers a free download of the intro and the first chapter.
Right. And your website, ministry website, and speaking website is what?
AmberParker.net.
All right. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
Catherine will be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
iMarketing.com provides easily editable websites to small business owners. And if they don't want to make the changes to the site themselves, they can simply email the changes to iMarketing.com and they'll take care of it for no additional cost. iMarketing.com is also a Google certified partner, which means you'll get your website listed on over 1,000 search engines across the internet very quickly. Let iMarketing.com help you get your share of the web today by calling 513-942-7869, or you can email iMarketing.com at sales@imktg.com today.
Did you know that memory loss now affects almost 7 million people in America? And the Alzheimer's Research Foundation estimates that by the year 2050, there will be 50 million people with dementia in America. Are you preparing your family, especially your grandchildren, for this issue? This is Dan Perkins, and I'm the author of a new book for children ages 9 to 12 and their families to help them understand that it's not their fault when Grammy can't remember them. Why Can't Grammy Remember Me is available at Amazon or through your local bookseller. Don't make your grandchildren part of the lost generation.
Buoyancy PR, telling your story, keeping your message afloat. Okay, enough about us. Let's talk about you. You have a great story to tell. Whether it's a product, a new book, or a worthy cause, you have a message worth hearing. Buoyancy PR will help you fine-tune that message and get it over the sea of information. Who, what, where, when, how, and why? These classic questions of a news story will introduce you to Buoyancy PR. After you've had a chance to get acquainted, let us know what we can do for you. For more information, contact Joni Sullivan Baker at 513-319-3231 or go to buoyancypr.com.
Hey, Cincinnati. Rick and Noel here from Ultimate Air Shuttle. We are excited to announce our next destination, Nashville.
Beginning March 16th, Ultimate Air will offer the only nonstop flights from Cincinnati to Nashville for only $274 each way. Two daily flights will be available Monday through Friday from Cincinnati's Lunkin Airport to Nashville. Save 25% off a round-trip ticket or book your weekend getaway for only $199 each way.
The schedule is now open. Book now at ultimateairshuttle.com.
Ultimate Air Shuttle flights are public charter sold and operated by Ultimate Jet Charters, LLC.
Hi, this is Karen Sokolov-Javich, and I just became a grandma and wrote 17 songs for my new babies.
Splishy, splashy in the bathy. Splishy, splashy in the tub.
Share my smiling splashy, baby song album with your little ones.
You've got 10 fingers and 10.
Order my baby album and you'll receive my children's album for free. Just call JMR Productions at 402-393-3893 for your special gift. That's 402-393-3893.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Riker on W4CY.
We are back on Catherine Riker's Let's Just Talk with Amber Parker and her new book, Finding Simplicity, Learning to Live Like Jesus in the Midst of a Complicated World. And I have to tell you that I'm so excited to find out that you are a ministry executive and you serve in a mission organization. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I work at Advancing Native Missions.
Say that again.
It's called Advancing Native Missions. So we're a global mission organization, and we partner with church leaders and pastors all over the world who are reaching their own nation and their own people with the gospel.
Okay, so do you belong to a certain church as well, or you... Go ahead.
The organization is interdenominational.
Okay.
So we work across denominations.
So... this is your regular job every day, am I correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So do you travel around the world or around the country or what?
I do get to do some international traveling, so that's an exciting part of the job. This year I'm going to get to go to Guatemala and Liberia and Ghana.
Oh, wow. Don't forget to take all your shots, kid.
Yes, ma'am, that's an important, and malaria meds.
Tell me a little bit about what your focus is in your mission ministry, if you wouldn't mind.
So what we do is we focus on advocating and supporting these people who are reaching their own people, because often they have a church and a ministry that's fully equipped with they know the language, the culture, the people, but they don't have the financial resources to make the headway that they want to. So often, you know, if you look at maybe a pastor in Nepal or Burma, they can live off of $150 a month. And so if we are able to come alongside them, pray for them, encourage them, and advocate for them and get them support, it just infuses a whole nother level to their ministry that allows them to do more and spread God's word faster.
Do you also raise money for them?
Yes.
So do you go to other churches and talk about the different mission projects that you're working on?
Yeah, so our organization does that. We partner with many churches and a lot of donors in the U.S.
So what's ahead for you in your writing and your ministry? And have you started the next book?
In my mind, I have the next book. I have some ideas that are rolling around in my head, and so I'm deciding between two what I want to start as the next project. So hopefully I'm planning maybe like late spring or summer to start working on that.
Right. So do you meet a lot of people in your travels? You travel mostly in the United States, is that correct?
I travel a little bit in the U.S. and then usually, you know, maybe 3 to 5 international trips a year.
And how long do you stay in each area?
Most of the time, it'd be about an 8 to 10 day trip when we visit.
Okay. So you lead teams and you've mm-hmm. taught internationally. How do you tackle the cultural differences between your experience and as an American woman who's a leader in a women ministry leaders in other parts of the world? And do you encounter a lot of women in certain countries, or do you see mostly men?
So I have had the opportunity to work with different women's groups. This last year, I was a part of a women's conference in Cuba and a women's conference in Liberia. Both of those, I would say, you know, vastly different cultures. But I think when I go in, I always try to focus on the heart. So, you know, you have to be careful with your illustrations and make sure they cross-translate. But the heart always translates. And when you go to the soul and the heart of who we have the same struggles. And I think what's been interesting to me is, you know, many times on the trips we have different people on our team, be it men or women, sharing their testimonies, sharing their stories, how God's working, and the local people will respond and say, we didn't realize that American people have the same struggles that we have. Because sometimes the thought is people in America, they don't have any problems because they have money and they have all these resources. But as human beings, we struggle with the same things.
Well, let's talk about Cuba, for instance. Do they watch you while you're in Cuba because it's a communist country?
Well, if they were watching me, they did a good job because I didn't know it. But, you know, when we've traveled in partnership with churches there, and we've been on religious visas, and so very apparent what we're doing and all pre-approved. But I have found, like, Cuba is one of my favorite places. I've been 5 times, and the people in Cuba are the warmest, friendliest people, and I admire the church leaders there so much. They're godly, passionate people.
Do a lot of them want to leave?
You know, I don't hear that a lot, but I think the big challenge for them is many of them have family in the U.S., so it's that having your family split and not being able to see each other. It's a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. How much poverty is in Cuba today?
Well, I think that it is definitely there. It looks a little bit different because the average income in Cuba is low, but a lot of the education level is high. So,
are they allowed to teach religion in the schools?
I do not believe so.
Okay. So you're actually bringing religion to them again?
Well, I would say when our teams go, we're partnering with the churches that are already there. So we're just coming alongside them and helping them do what they're already doing.
Are you finding Catholic churches, Jewish faiths, lots of different faiths in Cuba?
I think they have a mix that the denomination that I've worked the most with is the Baptist Convention, but I do know that there is a lot of the Catholic faith there, too. It's very prevalent.
Right. Why do you like Cuba so much? Because of the people and their warmth?
Mm-hmm. Yes. They're a very warm, welcoming culture. You know, it's you walk down the street and they go to do visitation and they can just, hey, here we come. Oh, come on in, have some coffee. You know, and the pace of life is just very different than here. So I always enjoy that, the warmth and the slower pace.
So when did the book come out originally?
So it launches April 7th this year.
Oh, wow. It's just been out not quite a year, right?
So no, this year, 2020. So it'll, yeah.
Oh, the,
so depending
the book
on
hasn't come out yet.
Yes.
Oh, so it's coming out April 7th. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you so very, very much for joining us today on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk. And go to your wonderful website at amberparker.net. And also you can publish the book from where? Amazon?
Purchase it from Amazon. Yeah, I think that's the easiest.
I think that's the easiest way, too. And thank you so very much for joining us on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk. And don't forget to go to our website at CatherineRakersWorld.com and Let's Just Talk Radio.com. We'll see you soon.
Catherine will be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. Do you want to read wonderful novels about historic, wonderful places in Youngstown, Ohio? Then you need to get Don Greco's books. The nice thing about his books are they're not about spies. They're not about zombies. They're just ordinary people that read that have extraordinary lives. Visit DonGrecoNovels.com. Little children aren't the only ones afraid of the dark. Millions of soldiers return from war zones with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, anger, frustration, fear, and loneliness, much of which surfaces during the darkness of night. You have the chance to change the lives of these American heroes. Songs and Stories for Soldiers was created to serve veterans who deal with the lack of sleep due to their injuries. Songs and Stories for Soldiers.us provides a free MP3 player for these men and women. With a list of 3 million songs in 16 different styles, 100,000 audiobooks, and 30,000 old-time radio programs, every veteran can find something to soothe and comfort them at no cost. All our players contain an 8-hour audio program designed to help veterans fall asleep. With 1,500-plus vets now participating, it's our goal to deliver 10,000 audio players this year. To learn how you can help, go to our website at songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us. Help us to help a veteran make it through the night.
This is Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. Do you remember where you were on February 23rd, 1945? A bunch of Marines were lifting a flag on Iwo Jima. The battle lasted 36 days, killing 5,931 Marines. Additionally, 209 Navy corpsmen and surgeons assigned to the Marines died, as well as soldiers, sailors, and airmen from other units. More than 110,000 Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen served, with more than 26,000 killed or wounded. So here's your veteran's tip of the day. As you walk by an American flag, stop for a moment and think of the tens of thousands of soldiers and sailors, airmen, and Marines who were killed or wounded in those days in February of 1945. You will be better for thinking of them. This has been your Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker on W4CY.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. Our guest today is Marty Irby. He is the executive director of the Animal Wellness Program in Washington, D.C. And this topic today is Kentucky Congressman James Comer was praised for sponsoring the Horse Racing Integrity Act. And I want to welcome you to our show today, and let's talk about this animal wellness action, if you don't mind, Marty.
Yes, thank you so much for having me today, Catherine. I greatly appreciate it. And our organization just started a few years ago. I worked at the Humane Society for about 2.5 years after working on Capitol Hill for former Congressman Ed Whitfield, and I ran the equine department there. And several of us left the Humane Society to form Animal Wellness Action, which is a 501c4 and political action committee in Washington, D.C. And we focus on a number of issues, mainly on the federal level, but horses are my heart, and I've been a lifelong horseman. I don't even remember learning how to ride. I was so young. So I always try to work as hard as we can to advance the interest of protecting horses.
So one of the things that this is basically coming out of the state of Kentucky, am I correct?
That's right. Yeah. Congressman James Comer, who's the first district of Kentucky, which is about the western third of the state, co-sponsored the Horse Racing Integrity Act just a few days ago. And that's a huge, huge thing for us with this effort because Congressman Andy Barr, who represents Lexington, has been leading the bill for about 5 years. And not one single member of the Kentucky congressional delegation has joined in supporting him until now.
What were they doing? Were they doping horses, or what is the bill about, actually?
Yeah, so the legislation would actually ban the use of drugs on race day in American horse racing. Currently, a variety of drugs are legal in the U.S. and Canada, and we're the only two countries in the world that allow this. So the U.S. is at the bottom of the barrel compared to Great Britain, Australia, Dubai, and all of these other locations. And we want to bring the industry up to par with the rest of the world. In addition to that, it would give USADA, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, which oversees the Olympics and caught Lance Armstrong and oversees many other sports, the authority to do in and out of competition testing in doping and create a uniform national set of rules and standard for testing in American horse racing across the board that would apply in all 50 states at every track to every trainer and owner, et cetera.
And we've got some pretty big races coming up, don't we?
We do. We're approaching the Santa Anita Derby, I think, in just a few weeks. And then, of course, the big Kentucky Derby in May.
That's for sure. Do you come to the Kentucky Derby?
I haven't been in a long time. I did go the year Giacomo won and the year Smarty Jones won. But it's honestly so crowded that it's not a place I really enjoy visiting. I work with the Coalition for Horse Racing Integrity, which includes the Jockey Club, the Preakness, the Belmont, and other major entities in the industry. So I attend a couple each year with them. There are several safety summits we have in Saratoga, New York at the track, and the Belmont, and even at Keeneland in Lexington.
Well, you know, I go, I actually go to Keeneland and a lot of the different places, and I hate to say this, but I don't like to go in big crowds. So
I don't either. I'm with you.
I was actually very fortunate a few years ago to actually go down to Lexington to, and this doctor who was a very famous veterinarian who actually built a lot of the stables and took care of all the horses and everything. He took me to some of the top stables in Lexington. And I have to tell you, it was absolutely the most wonderful tour that I ever had, and that I could actually see and meet the people that actually not only are the owners of the horses, but the trainers and everybody that was involved. And a few years ago, Marty, I did a thing the racetrack out at Coney, it's called Coney Island, out in near, used to be near the thing. I'm trying to think of what the name of the racetrack is right now, but I actually got to be behind the scenes and do a television show about how they prepare a horse, you know, for a race, you know, everything and everyone about the racing industry. And because a friend of mine owned around 40 racehorses. So I was very honored to do that show. So I'm very involved in horses. I love horse racing and I love horses. So I used to have a Tennessee Walker. So anything to protect those beautiful animals, I'm there for it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm with you 100%. What we really need to do is work as hard as we can to protect the horses. And I grew up in the Tennessee walking horse industry myself and worked to stop a practice called soaring for many years that still continues. But I know if you had a Tennessee walker, you know how wonderful and versatile they are as well.
Oh, wow. They're beautiful. They're beautiful, beautiful horses. And I lived in England and we had horses on our, on the estate where I lived. And it was just beautiful to walk out and go up and talk to them and just feed them a carrot or whatever, and just to be able to see how magnificent they are and why we should protect them. And so anyhow, tell me a little bit about what happened today in D.C.
Yes, well, my phone was steadily buzzing this morning. I think it was even before daylight with calls and text messages and emails and tweets and all that sort of thing. And so the U.S. Attorney's Office, actually in the Southern District of New York, handed out 27 indictments this morning in horse racing. Before that, prior to that, earlier in the morning around 5 o'clock, there apparently was a raid at a track known as Gulfstream Park West down in Florida and another training facility down there that the FBI raided. I later spoke to the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office. And of those 27 people charged, there were trainers, veterinarians, and drug distributors who had basically defrauded the betting public. One of the trainers, Jason Service, was actually the trainer of Maximum Security, who won the Kentucky Derby last year, but then was later disqualified because of another infraction that wasn't related to drugging. So it's a big thing. I think this is going to give our legislation more momentum than we've ever had. This is probably the greatest scandal in modern American horse racing, at least in decades, I think.
There's greedy people out there that just don't care, right?
Absolutely. There are so many, and they'll do anything to gain an edge, to make the horse run a few seconds faster. And most of them don't really have much regard for the well-being of the horse. And they really don't care about the betting public and the fact that this is fraud in their consumers that they're also taking advantage of.
Right. And that's the saddest part about it. What's the nicest part of your job?
Well, the nicest part of my job is that I get to have the opportunity to meet so many different horse people from around the world. I work a lot with Monty Roberts, who's, you know, the man who listens to horses. He's a great friend, and have had the opportunity to meet people and talk to people in the horse industry that I otherwise would have probably never connected with. And there's so many wonderful and great people in the horse industry that I wish the rest of the world could talk to.
Right. I mean, to be able to see what they do every day, to see how, you know, they're, you know, from the foal to the first time that they ever race. I mean, I love going out to my friend's farm to watch the way everything is done and the way they're caring for it. He just hit a foal, and his race horses are just so beautiful. He cares so much about them, and that makes such a difference. And to be able to go to the race and watch it, and to watch behind the scenes, I think is pretty exciting as well. I couldn't believe it. I have to send you the television show I did. It was really exciting.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I would. I mean, like you, I have friends that my good friends Stacy and Arthur Hancock, who have Stone Farm down in Paris, Kentucky. They're some of the finest horse racing people I've ever known, and they're the same as what you're saying your friends are like, and, you know, pay so much attention and care to the foals that they're raising and the horses that they have in their stable.
I was amazed at when you go behind the scenes into the stables and stuff, it's like another world, you know, to see the behind the scenes part of it instead of, you know, race day, everybody's, you know, whatever. So unbelievable what they do, what time they get up in the morning, how they train, you know, what happens if there's an injury. I mean, unreal.
And it is.
And it's an expensive sport, actually, racing, because what they go through and what it costs them to race, they have partners, which, you know, for just one horse, I mean, just think of all the partnerships that they have in the industry itself.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's very expensive. I think that's why they probably call it the sport of kings, but I guess there aren't near as many kings as there used to be.
Right. And I couldn't believe, you know, I lived in England, and I knew, you know, actually I got to go to the very, very famous Royal Mews. And a friend of mine's cousin ran the Royal Mews. And to see, you know, the Queen loves horses more than anybody that I know besides my friends, of course, and you. But, you know, you can understand the love of, you know, the animal is such a beautiful, and I work with so many wonderful people that do programs with horses with people with disabilities. We need to take a short break. Marty, would you give your website out, and then we'll be right back?
Yes, our website, www.animalwellnessaction.org.
And will you tell people about what the bill is real quick? I'm not what it's – we're going to talk about that when you come back. What's the bill number?
Oh, it's H.R. 1754 in the U.S. House and then S. 1820 in the U.S. Senate, the Horse Racing Integrity Act.
Okay. We'll be right back on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
Catherine will be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
This is Dan Perkins with your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. Do you remember where you were on February 23rd, 1945? A bunch of Marines were lifting a flag on Iwo Jima. The battle lasted 36 days, killing 5,931 Marines. Additionally, 209 Navy corpsmen and surgeons assigned to the Marines died, as well as soldiers, sailors, and airmen from other units. More than 110,000 Marines, sailors, soldiers, and airmen served, with more than 26,000 killed or wounded. So here's your veteran's tip of the day. As you walk by an American flag, stop for a moment and think of the tens of thousands of soldiers and sailors, airmen, and Marines who were killed or wounded in those days in February of 1945. You will be better for thinking of them. This has been your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day.
Hi, this is Karen Sokolov-Javich, and I just became a grandma and wrote 17 songs for my new babies.
Splishy, splashy in the bathy. Splishy, splashy in the tub.
Share my smiling splishy, baby song album with your little ones.
You've got 10 fingers and 10.
Order my baby album and you'll receive my children's album for free. Just call JMR Productions at 402-393-3893 for your special gift. That's 402-393-3893.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Riker on W4CY.
We are back on Catherine Riker's Let's Just Talk, and we have a wonderful guest who is the Executive Director of Animal Wellness in Washington, D.C., and that's Marty Irby. When did you first get, Marty, welcome back to the show, where did you first actually started riding and your love of horses?
Well, it's interesting. I tell people I really don't remember because I started riding so early that I don't remember learning how to ride. My father was a horse trainer, and what I'm told is I was riding horses by the age of two by myself, and I do remember first showing horses alone in the saddle at the age of four. So it's been a part of my entire life. I'm 40 years old now, and I went from, you know, the competition and show horse world into efforts to reform the horse industry and protect the horses. And they've been like my best friends my whole life. So I just care more about horses, honestly, than anything else in the world. And they've always been the number one thing in my life.
Is your father still alive?
Yes, he is. He's no longer training horses, though. He's in real estate. I think he learned long ago there wasn't much profitability in training Tennessee walking horses, but my family still has horses and breeds foals and raises horses, and I try to hopefully get to ride one about once or twice a year, but it's not very often here in Washington, D.C.
Right. So, you know, I think that I live really close to horse country. My mother's originally from Kentucky. She rode horses, she rode bareback, she did all of it, and she had such a love of horses, and I think that she, you know, passed that down to all of us, and then when I had the chance, like I said, in England and everywhere else to be part of that scene, it was really wonderful, because I worked with not only Tennessee Walkers, but regular Tressage, and all different types of horse training, and one of the gals that I work with actually films horses in Tressage, and actually she was this weekend doing it. So, you know, it seems like it's around me all the time.
Well, it's the same for me. My grandfather was a veterinarian, and he got his first Tennessee walking horse in 1955, a horse named April Sue Neal, and of course that led to my father's involvement and my own, and later on after I stopped competing, I was the president of the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association, which is in Tennessee, the breed registry, and I delved more into the study of the pedigrees and things like that. So whether it's been, you know, riding or studying pedigrees or raising foals or working just to protect the horses, it's wonderful to have them in our lives.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever worked with the Mustang Association?
I actually work with the American Wild Horse Campaign, which is different than the Mustang Association, but they work to protect the wild horses out on the range, and we spend probably about 10 or 20% of our time on that issue. It's a different group of people. I will say the wild horse people are probably more passionate than any group of horse people I've ever met.
And I've worked with them before, and I've done shows with them before. And actually, I was so thrilled to be part of that. You know, I've been to Texas many times and been out on the range in Oklahoma and Texas, and actually got to really experience what the wild horses are all about. And to me, we need to save them, absolutely.
Absolutely. That's one thing I have not been able to do, is to go out on the range with the wild horses that I really want to do. You know, there's a threat right now with about $21 million in funding the federal government appropriated to be able to round up and remove and incarcerate more wild horses over a period of 10 years than actually are what existing on the range today. I think it's like 130,000 wild horses, and there are only 80 on the range today. So we're at a crossroads and a very dire time for the wild horses.
That's sad. We need to do a show all about them. That would be really exciting, actually.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, I'm all in for it, Marty, whatever you want to do.
We could definitely do that. I have so many different wild horse groups we work with, the Cloud Foundation. We did a briefing on Capitol Hill, I think it was back in November of this past year, about the plan that I'm telling you about. And we had a packed house with congressional staff that were so interested in the wild horse issue, because not many people know that much about it. They just know that they're there, but they don't really understand the mechanics and dynamics of what the problems are and what we're faced with.
That's true. I worked with some people in Nashville, actually, that did the music and the song for the Wild Horse Association. And they're really good friends of mine. I'll introduce him to them. He's a real cowboy. And what I think is so interesting is I really, really, really love history in the Old West. And I think that this is part of our American culture. And if we don't save it or keep it or keep these beautiful creatures safe, I think that's really important. And the people that take care of them.
Well, it is. And, you know, I know when I grew up, you know, I watched Bonanza and many other television shows. And I know many people watched Roy Rogers and Dale Evans and John Wayne. And you don't have that today. And our society is shifting in such a way that there aren't very many people riding horses anymore. And so we've moved away from that. And when you have a generation or two that haven't been involved in the horse world, they don't really think much about it or want to do much to help. So we have to keep people involved, and we have to keep horses out there in front of the public so that it maintains its status as an icon of this country. You know, the United States was built on the backs of horses, and we owe it to them to honor them from now on.
I can't.
That's probably the easiest thing anyone can do is make that phone call.
Make that phone call. And those bills number again are what?
H.R. 1754 in the U.S. House and S-1820 in the U.S. Senate.
Well, I know who my congressmen and my senators are. Believe me, I do.
So we need them on board. Ohio's been a tough state, so it'd be great to get them on board.
Definitely, we need to. I can't thank you enough, Marty, for joining me today on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk. I can't wait to see you in Washington in the upcoming months, because I'll be there. So it's going to be really exciting. And maybe we need to spend some time together when I come up.
Absolutely. I'll be looking forward to it. We'll go to lunch at the Capitol Hill Club, and I'll be looking forward to coming back on the show as well.
Thank you so very much, and have a wonderful day. And
all right, you too.
Okay, and your website one more time.
Oh, www.animalwellnessaction.org.
All right, and thank you for joining me today on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
You've been listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker, sponsored by Buoyancy PR, Johnny Baker Sullivan, Don Greco, author, Thames Chocolates, IDI Dentistry, Dr. Jim Butler,
iMarketing, JMR Productions, Dan Perkins, author, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, nonprofit, Skip Kenny Barbecue, Ultimate Air Shuttle, and Vidal, Veterans in Defense of Liberty. You're listening to W4CY.